Jim Chapter, your host on Non-Random Thoughts with my special guest, Steve Jones. Steve, with your concurrence, I think we'll take squeeze in a couple of callers here as we continue our conversation about your research.
Sure.
Paul in New Mexico, are you there, Paul?
Hello?
Yes, Paul.
Yes, Dr. Jones, wanted to commend you on the work you're doing to, you know, increase our national security here in our country. And a couple questions. I was seeing a video of the North Tower when it collapsed or was demolished, and somewhere around the floors where the plane hit, as it was imploding or whatever, there was a massive flame ball coming out, and so I had a question: what could be the fuel for that, possibly, since that was well over an hour after the plane hit? Is that, could that be a possible thermite derivative type of as far as fuel? And the other question would be, as far as the pulverization of the concrete, is there a way to estimate the amount of force required to pulverize concrete into that fine of a dust? Is there any way to estimate that from the video footage and the rate of which it extends out, et cetera?
Sure. Yeah, listen, those are good questions. So on the first one, the fireball that you see coming out of the North Tower, this is certainly evidence that would be make one think, at least, of the hypothesis of explosives. And there are a number of others, the squibs that come out. And then this says, we see no evidence for it. Okay, there's plenty of evidence. This is one of them. Now, that particular one, I haven't seen anyone study it in detail. I haven't myself, the fireball. The reason is there's the alternative explanation. Well, the fires were accelerated from the puff of compressed air, you see, for whatever. There were some fires, of course, there. So, in other words, while it is evidence, it's not perhaps the strongest evidence that we have for the use of explosives. I would suggest that squibs, these plumes of dust and debris well below now the reaction region, are stronger evidence. You see, way down where there is, you're far away, what, about, I think it was 20 floors for the North Tower below, when you see those squibs coming out, those very prominent squibs. Now, your second question about pulverization of concrete is very interesting. That has been studied in some detail by Gordon Ross, a mechanical engineer in the United Kingdom. His papers, two papers now on this subject, are in our Journal of 9/11studies.com. So if you just type that in, or you can go to st911.org, upper left-hand corner, you'll see the Journal of 9/11 Studies logo. Click on that, and it'll take you to our journal. So the point is, there are two papers by Gordon Ross, and that analyzes the amount of energy required for the pulverization. His point is, his argument is, when you consider the energy that's required to pulverize the concrete, along with the other energy losses as the collapse initiates, lo and behold, the collapse is arrested because of all these energy losses. See, we have to throw in conservation of energy in studying what happened to these buildings. The official theory is that fire and damage initiated the collapse, but then the question is, what happens after initiation? And that question is not even answered in the NIST study. They only take it to the point where the collapse is poised to collapse.
We'll be right back with my special guest, Stephen Jones.
Attention, this is an RBN Self-Reliance update. RBN has just learned of a new bioactive superfood for garden plants, flowers, and herbs. It's called ProtoGrow, and it is so effective at producing rapid and natural plant growth that it seems to force plants to grow like crazy under almost any soil in light conditions. Now, here's the best part for our listeners who garden for self-reliance. ProtoGrow's unique blend of C nutrients maximizes mineral uptake, dramatically increases bloom set, and gives any plant a tremendous burst of new growth. In fact, some plants may double in size the very first month. ProtoGrow is also guaranteed to produce more succulent, mouth-watering fruits and vegetables than you can carry back to the house. And if you want to double or triple the potency of herbs or wheatgrass, you can. If you want to grow nutritionalized superfoods with non-hybrids, it's now easy. RBN listeners who want to stay prepared should call right now to order ProtoGrow. Ask about their self-reliant super pack. Call 877-327-0365. 877-327-0365. Or visit the ProtoGrow website at www.protogrow.com.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big-money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49. Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
You say you want a revolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. You tell me that it's evolution. But when you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can count me out? Don't you know it's gonna be alright?
This is your host, Jim Fetzer, the program Non-Random Thoughts, with my special guest, Steve Jones. Steve, before we go to another caller, I'd just like to ask a question or two in elaboration of the second issue there. I mean, I take it that the thermite or thermite is so important because of its steel cutting properties. I mean, you know, right. It just cuts so fast, right?
That's right.
And therefore, we have the question of what about the additional energy that might be required to bring about that pulverization? I mean, we're talking about an extremely rapid phenomenon, and it also seems to be a source of energy that ejected steel sections that weighed dozens of tons, hundreds of feet out from the building. It's not obvious to me that, or others, I suppose, that thermite or thermate could do that. So are you supplementing your thermite with as a steel cutter with additional explosives?
Yes. Now, Jim, a super thermite is, I discussed this in my paper now in recent weeks, super thermite is explosive in nature. Ordinary thermite is incendiary, cut through the steel. Super thermite is explosive and, of course, would also cut through the steel. And we've actually found patented and manufactured devices that allow for linear cutting through the steel. So this now is a partial answer. I just want to say RDX could also have been used, or HMX, but super thermite is explosive and could have been used as explosive. Now, the other part of your question, the energy required. See, first of all, the government official story is that gravity alone must be sufficient to pulverize all this concrete. Well, that is not the case. Gordon Ross and Derek Grimmer and others have gone through the calculations. There's too much energy required to pulverize the concrete, which energy, however, can be provided by these explosives that we are discussing. And there is sufficient energy in these conventional explosives to pulverize the concrete, yes. Now, that's an important point, because some people say, well, it requires a mini nuke to pulverize. No. You look at the destruction of the Seattle King Dome. That was pulverized. I mean, I've looked at it, I've studied it, and read about it, too, and it was set up to actually pulverize the concrete. Now, the reason was they didn't want big chunks of concrete in Seattle hitting the ground, because that might disrupt the buildings and transportation around, which are close to the King Dome. It's a very populated area, you see. But so ordinary explosives were sufficient to pulverize the concrete, in addition, to, of course, to the gravitational potential energy during the fall.
So you see
the point I'm getting at? So,
yes,
additional energy is required beyond gravity, but the official story is out. That's a very important point. The second point is these more conventional and also super thermite, rather unconventional explosives, are sufficient without needing a mini nuke to account for the pulverization.
And of course, if we can't account for all the phenomena using more conventional explosives, then Occam's razor would suggest that would be sufficient without resorting to fission, fusion, scale, or whatever.
Exactly.
So that's where it would plug in. Well, look, let's take another call. Dave in Wisconsin. Dave, are you there?
Hello?
Dave, are you there?
Hi, Professors Jones and Fetzer. I'd like to thank you, first of all, for your work on all this. It's great. I have two questions. One is, other than the visual evidence of the thermite, how do you guys know that the thermite used to cut the beams after the collapse was not used to cut the beams after the collapse to move it onto trucks and stuff like that? And the other one would be, what do you think about the Israeli or Zionist role in all this? And I'm going to hang up and let you guys go. Thank you.
Steve, if you want to take the first, I'll take the second.
Okay, good, Jeff. Sounds good. Yeah, of course, we are looking. We've asked workers at the scene. I have a friend who, Mike is his name, who knows a number of workers who worked at Ground Zero. And they, to a man, all said that the cutting of the steel was done with oxyacetylene torches. And we see pictures over and over. And another researcher, Robert Moore, looked now at hundreds, I think really thousands of pictures from Ground Zero. And I asked him, is there any evidence for anything besides oxyacetylene torches being used to cut the structural steel after the demolition? He said, no. That's 100%. So we have total agreement on that. Now, beyond that, thermite, to use it in cleanup would be a safety hazard beyond belief. I mean, you know, it's thermite, when it goes off, produces sparks of white-hot molten iron. And when it contacts the flesh, I have had the experience reading about this in the military. See, the military uses thermite incendiaries and grenades, unfortunately, and so they know what happens when thermite contacts the flesh. It just burns a hole right in you, Jim. It's not something you're going to use to clean up at Ground Zero.
It sounds a lot like white phosphorus, Steve.
In that sense, except that it's It'll, except that, of course, the molten iron from thermite will also melt through steel. So you're not going to use it in cleanup, either at ground zero or as you cart the steel away. No. So that question we have thoroughly explored and resolved. If thermite was used, and there is tremendous evidence, as I mentioned, from the solidified metal, now we're looking at the dust and still puzzling, but consistent with thermite, certainly.
Let me pick up on the second part of the question,
go ahead.
Which is a bit more loaded. There are multiple indications that there was Israeli foreknowledge of what was going to occur, including, for example, that there were a group of at least five Israeli so-called art students on a building across the Hudson who were taking photographs and drinking champagne and celebrating as these events went down. So clearly there was Israeli foreknowledge. I've had residents in Brooklyn call me to explain to me that their rabbi told them that they should not go into Manhattan the following day, which was going to turn out to be 9/11. Larry Silverstein, of course, who had leased the World Trade Center and 6 weeks before had insured the buildings for the World Trade Center for $3.5 billion against terrorist attack, and later would claim there were two attacks and therefore he should receive $7 billion, is a good friend with Benjamin Netanyahu. We know that his first reaction on being told about this was that it would be good for Israel, and then I think he considered that it might not be a politically popular thing to say, so he qualified it about, but the idea was now the American people would know what it would be like to be subjected to a terrorist attack. One of the more interesting aspects of this is that the magazine Popular Mechanics was subject to a hostile takeover not long before they published an article debunking the 9/11 myth. And involved in that was the person who turned out to be the senior researcher on the piece is named Benjamin Chertoff, who just happens to be the cousin of Michael Chertoff, who's our secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, which means that Benjamin Chertoff was hired to write the article that would receive nationwide attention about the veracity of the government's explanation. Michael Chertoff, interestingly, is one of a number of figures that have been prominent in the administration that has a dual citizenship, both Israeli and United States, which to me is extremely puzzling that we should put somebody in such a delicate position, such a sensitive, profoundly important position, who has obvious conflict of interest, just as Zev Dockheim, who was the controller of the Pentagon, was in that position up to the time when Secretary Rumsfeld, the day before 9/11, explained to Congress that the Pentagon couldn't account for $2.3 trillion. I think there are a lot of interesting questions here that raise serious issues with regard to the possibility of Israeli involvement here, and they're ones from which we should not shy. There's an enormous difference, of course, between attitudes toward the Jewish people and attitudes toward Israel and the Israeli government and its policies, so that in looking for a truth here is not committing a form of anti-Semitism. We're using science to discover what happened in the case of 9/11. And science is very objective. The melting point of steel is not Democrat or Republican. The highest temperature those jet fuel fires can attain is not liberal or conservative. And achieving as much success as we can, given the resources at our disposal, including, for example, that none of us, there's no budget for the society. We receive no funding. We're all doing this voluntarily because we believe it's in the national interest that the American people should know the truth about the events of 9/11. So
exactly.
I want to thank that, Steve.
I just say I concur with your comments there, Jim.
Excellent. Well, let's see if Don is there. Don in Ohio, are you there?
Yes, I am. I got two questions. First, have you read the article by Jerry Mazza, The Twin Towers Wreckage Turning Up All Over the Place?
Give us a sketch of what's in that piece.
Well, he's basically saying that they've got a 80,000. Let's see what he's saying here. I just added to 80,000 square foot hangar at JFK International Airport that's full.
Oh,
of...
Oh yeah, there's supposed to be a mountain of the steel left over that's actually in an enormous hangar. Had you heard about that, Steve?
Yes, I have. And indeed, there's a big chunk of the previously molten metal in there also. And I've seen, in fact, there's a photo of it on my in my paper.
Of course, I don't imagine there's a ghost of a chance of our getting access to that.
Well, you know, it's in our petition, Jim. We want access to Hangar 17.
Yep. Tell me you want to make a statue out of it. You'll get it.
Stand by. Hang on. Hang on, everyone. We'll be right back with my special guest, Steve Jones.
We'll be right back. headline news, the much-anticipated bird flu pandemic. Whether you consider it dangerous or not makes no difference. It will still be the reason to confine and restrict travel. Conclusion, if we can't feed ourselves locked down at home, Homeland Security will be forced to bring us to gathering centers. Remember Katrina and the Superdome? The World War II bomb shelters in England, and the concentration camps throughout history. They were all huge disease incubators infesting confinees with dozens of life-threatening illnesses. Even if the wimpy little bird flu can't get you, the camps and the immunization will. If the government says store some non-perishable food, you know we'll need a lot. Decide how many years of food your family needs and get it before it's gone or can't be transported. Remember, folks, bad food plans are life-threatening. Call the co-op at 800-409-5633 for warnings and guidelines. That's the J. Michael Stevens Group, 800-409-5633, or on the web, efoodsdirect.com. That's efoodsdirect.com.
Attention, this is an RBN Self-Reliance update. RBN has just learned of a new bioactive superfood for garden plants, flowers, and herbs. It's called ProtoGrow, and it is so effective at producing rapid and natural plant growth that it seems to force plants to grow like crazy under almost any soil in light conditions. Now, here's the best part for our listeners who garden for self-reliance. ProtoGrow's unique blend of seed nutrients maximizes mineral uptake, dramatically increases bloom set, and gives any plant a tremendous burst of new growth. In fact, some plants may double in size the very first month. ProtoGrow is also guaranteed to produce more succulent, mouth-watering fruits and vegetables than you can carry back to the house. And if you want to double or triple the potency of herbs or wheatgrass, you can. If you want to grow nutritionalized superfoods with non-hybrids, it's now easy. RBN listeners who want to stay prepared should call right now to order ProtoGrow. Ask about their self-reliant super pack. Call 877-327-0365. 877-327-0365. Or visit the ProtoGrow website at www.protogrow.com.
Over 100 million Americans have dangerously high cholesterol. Are you one of them? North American Urban Spice has developed Cholestamine, an all-natural food-based supplement proven to give your body the nutritional support it needs to lower cholesterol and improve circulation naturally without the side effects of harmful prescription drugs. Call today, 800-243-5242, 800-243-5242 for Cholestamine.
Introducing the world's best air purifier, the Aeronizer. The Aeronizer produces high levels of activated oxygen right from the air you're breathing. It works the way nature does. It's so powerful it kills molds and mildews as well as bacteria and viruses in the air and on the surfaces in your home. Made in the USA of the finest materials with an unconditional 2-year warranty. Call 877-605-9200 or visit the website at www.aeronair.us.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help. When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. Now, but now these days are gone, I'm not so self-assured. Now I find a gentle mind and open up the doors. If you can, I'm feeling down, and I do appreciate you being around. Help me get my feet back on the ground. Won't you please, please help me?
This is your host, Jim Fetzer. The program Non-Random Thoughts with my special guest, Steve Jones. Before we take another caller, I'd just like to mention that apparently part of the effort to discredit the 9/11 truth movement is to recycle the popular mechanics study in the form of a book. I'm quite confident that it's a form of recapitulation of exactly what was argued in the magazine, and therefore I'd like to point out that an excellent source of rebuttal information may be found on the website of Scholars for Truth, st911.org. If you simply scroll down the article section on the left-hand side, you'll find a couple of very serious studies that dismantle it. So I don't want anyone to feel as though they don't have the intellectual resources to cope with popular mechanics, which, as I have already explained, was subject to a hostile takeover. All the experienced editors and staff were fired so they could perpetrate this deception on the American public and trade upon its good name. So I want to turn now to another caller, Tom. Tom in Arkansas. Are you there, Tom?
It would be me. Hey, guys.
Please.
Good to catch up with both of you.
I haven't been able to send an email to either one of you for the last few months, but I did submit a document, and I've sent a copy of this certified and registered with the Arkansas Department of State. I was actually a witness early on in this campaign in 1989. I worked at the World Trade Towers when the architects' offices were taken over by what claimed to be FBI agents, and their documents were removed from the building directly related to the delivery of a proposal to demolish the building, which came from Controlled Demolition, Inc.
Fascinating. When was that, Tom?
This occurred, the final day that I worked there was May 9th of 1989, is as close as I can calculate. There was a meeting to be held the following day concerning the topping off of building number 7. So I observed from our offices the final pieces of steel going into the top of building 7, which at that point became an ultra-secure location. All the employees that worked at the Trade Tower were moved to Seattle or other parts of the government. They were given healthy pay bonuses, and we all had to sign a waiver that said we would never tell anyone about what we'd learned or what we'd done at the World Trade Tower.
Is this before or after 9/11?
Well, this is 1989. This is
1989. Yeah, go ahead.
10 years earlier.
Yeah, go ahead.
So my argument, and I am not here to teach anybody anything other than to repeat what I saw and come forth with, you know, honest information. The point is, in New York City, we must have a tremendous amount of city employees, architects, builders, people involved in the trades who knew quite well what was going on with Building 7 in those early days. Silverstein built Building 7 and upped the ante about 300% just as the thing was topping out, which is very unusual. So there's a tremendous mystery that researchers could be focusing on that's right there in plain sight on the books and records of subcontractors and different things that were going on with this property at that point.
This is wonderful, Tom. I'm very glad you've called in. Let me ask you a question or two.
Okay.
But my impression has been that that there were a couple of problems with the towers, as you know, and it may have been they were chronic problems. One, of course, was it was laden with asbestos, and that any proposal, you know, to remove that asbestos, which was used as a coating on the steel, as I understand it, would have been a gargantuan task at incredible expense. I mean, can anyone imagine constructing a scaffolding, for example, around a 110-story building? And second of all, that there were difficulties with occupancy, that Larry Silverstein wasn't getting a full return on his investment from the ordinary use of the buildings because a tremendous large number of offices were unoccupied, the whole floors and sections of the building.
That's correct. In my job at the time, I drove around the country and took pictures of famous works of architecture. I was heading to the top of the ladder and trying to be a constructive young participant in the architectural community, and had taken photos from L.A. to New York, back and forth. And I was based out of Denver prior to this and working with the USAF on various projects, like Columbine High, of all places. So I was sort of an inside player that day. I was a wild card. I had a perfect record and all sorts of access they got for me around the buildings. My job was to photograph the neighborhood so that they could put together the total package estimate of how much those scaffolds would cost. The idea was, let's take it down the clean way, the safe way, and the EPA-approved way. Now, one major, major thing that's been hidden from the public, and this has got to be the smoking gun, is that the EPA had produced a document or various legal things that occurred, and their demand was that the buildings had to come down by 2007. The EPA produced this document, handed it over to the mayor. This was sort of a deal that was supposed to happen when all of a sudden, well, the EPA ceased to function.
Tom, I want you to stand by so we can continue our conversation. Jim Fetzer on Non-Random Thoughts with my special guest Steve Jones. Stand by.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Go ever climbing as the dollar continues to spiral into a free fall. How long before it hits rock bottom? Between 1800 and 1913, the value of the dollar was more or less constant. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, the value of the dollar has depreciated 97%. Due to global inflationary policies and the continued erosion of the U.S. dollar, gold and silver are still in the early stages of the greatest bull market the world has ever seen. Whether you purchase precious metals to stabilize your portfolio or you're looking for strong growth, gold and silver will provide you with both. Don't you owe it to yourself to do business with Republic Trading Group? Call us today and become a part of the raging bull in gold and silver. 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898. Call now. 1-800-691-7898.
Stay connected to what's happening at the Republic Broadcasting Network by visiting our website,
www.rbnlive.com.
At rbnlive.com, you'll stay up to date with our latest broadcast schedule, learn about upcoming events, read about our air personalities and the programs they host, take part in discussion forums, read the latest breaking news, and listen to RBN programs on your computer by connecting to our live broadcast stream. Plus, you can download previous RBN programs from the archive completely free of charge. That's right. Unlike other services, there is no charge to download programs from the RBN archive. Share them freely with others who are not yet listeners to the Republic Broadcasting Network and help spread the word. We're taking America back through the power of information. Stay connected to the Republic Broadcasting Network and our website, rbnlive.com. The Idaho Observer is one of the last independent American presses and isn't afraid to print the truth. The Idaho Observer is a monthly 24-page hard copy newspaper in its fifth year of addressing important issues affecting all freedom-loving Americans. If you are concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you, then subscribe to the Idaho Observer. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. Idaho Observer readers receive vital insight into events as they unfold. Our articles editorially emphasize activism and serve as a networking tool for like-minded individuals determined to make a difference. The Idaho Observer, printing what you need to be fully informed on issues that matter to real Americans. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307. That's 208-255-2307.
Singing in the dead of night, take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
This is Jim Fetcher, your host on Non-Random Thoughts with my special guest Steve Jones. We're talking with Tom in Arkansas, who has some extraordinarily interesting information about the trade centers and the need for them to be demolished or deconstructed. And I take it, Tom, you're talking about this use of scaffolding was to dismantle the building, roughly speaking, brick by brick.
That's correct. Now, this is the largest building in the world. It's hard for people to fathom it if you didn't live near there. I lived about a half a mile north on Hudson Street. So I would get up at sunrise every day, or often. I can't claim that all the time. But I would get up at 6:30 in the morning and go out and watch what the sun did on the sides of this building. It fascinated me. So when I got the assignment to photograph it, I was thinking, well, you know, this is really a feather in my cap. But then they said, no, you're not going to photograph the buildings. You're going to photograph every building surrounding it in a one-point perspective, and we're going to draw up a scaffold. And we've got permission and clearance for you to go in all the buildings around it. It was surprising because literally I'd walk up and say, I'm the photographer, and they'd say, fine, go on up on the roof. There was no security. In other words, they had this whole neighborhood blocked off and communicated with every other building owner adjacent to the property. Now, surely, if we've got some old guy who's sitting in the engineering office thinking, well, yeah, now that is correct. Seems I do remember something about the Bridgeways project.
Tom, this is really extraordinarily important. Do you think you could email me and we could have some further communication and follow up on this? I'd very much like to pursue this with you.
You betcha. And let me mention for the listener still, though, because my complaint is I'm not in New York and I can't do enough research on this. We've looked into how they might have placed the munitions in a retrofit scenario. It must have been through the stairwells, through the main core. So we look at the repairs that were done to the elevator systems, to the electrical risers, and so on, because you've got to energize this system, and you've got to have guys climbing in and up into that ceiling and around those main core columns. That's my question scientifically, is how did we get the thermite to break through the concrete that would have encased the central core steel columns? There's your massive structural explosive requirement, not so much to the outer perimeter,
right.
It would be pretty easy to break free, you know.
Steve, would you like to comment on that?
Yeah, listen, I have a general comment, Jim, so I've been listening to Tom here, and I've had emails and a very important phone call. There are people who have this information like Tom's. You know, it's very significant. In other words, what we're doing, Jim, with the Scholars for 9/11, we're attracting like a magnet people who have information. They want to discuss what they know about 9/11, these anomalies.
Yes.
And they want to testify. Look, I know there was something wrong. Indication that these individuals have of an inside job. They have a piece of the puzzle, and these pieces together provide an overwhelming picture of complicity of a faction of our government. Now, what I'm saying is it's exciting to me that we have people like Tom call in, and I've had these, and I'm sure you have, Jim. I'm recording them, but these people, like the one young man that called me not too long ago with very significant information, but he said, I can't just discuss this, and I don't want my name disclosed. If there was some forum or a committee that could provide protection for my testimony, I would gladly give it. You see that?
Yeah.
Now, so I think this is a very important point. We can do the science, and we're hacking away at this official story, but if we could get some way where people like Tom and this other young man I mentioned, and the young man that spoke to Cheney, for instance, you know, what orders?
Yeah.
<Okay. laughs> Do the orders still stand? Okay, if we could get an environment in which these witnesses that have information could come and testify, and it should have been the 9/11 Commission. We all know that. But they didn't even talk about the demise of Building 7. So, and they didn't record this. Secretary Mineta's testimony about what happened in the bunker with Cheney. That was not in the 9/11. So the 9/11 Commission report is, at best, incomplete.
It was a whitewash, Vanessa.
It certainly is
question.
A whitewash. So we need some sort of forum for people to speak at. And I've been feeling this lately and thinking about it. I don't have a solution, but I'm so glad that Tom brought this up because we need to come up with a solution. Some senator, perhaps, or I don't know, maybe it'll be international in scope. I don't have a solution, Jim, but we definitely need a place where people can come with immunity, maybe a grand jury, and say, look, I know about this scaffolding that they were planning. I know about the plans. They knew the hijackers were going to come in, and they decided to let it happen and help it along. You know, the people that have this inside information, the young man, do these orders still stand, Vice President? I mean, we need to have a place where they can come and speak their minds and give their information and not be subject to either ridicule or imprisonment. You know, like Tom said, there's some agreement you're not supposed to talk about this. Well, under grand jury rules, for example, or a Senate hearing, if they'd ever get going on this seriously, they can have the power to allow people to speak freely without punishment.
I agree with all those sentiments. Tom, I want to thank you for calling, and I want you to get in contact with me, okay? I want to continue this conversation.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm so grateful to you, Tom, for calling in.
Well, and I heard from a...
Steve?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. Listen, while we have this opportunity, I want to ask you a couple of more technical questions.
Okay,
sure. That are directly related to your research. You know, I've raised a question about the film you've shown with the molten metal leaking or seeping out of the building.
Okay, and the South Tower.
Yeah. And the film never looked right to me. And I don't know quite how to account for it, but is it the case that the color of the metal coming out of the building is crucial on your analysis? In other words, if it were molten aluminum that actually glowed, for example, does that cause a serious problem for your analysis or not?
Well, I would say no. In that we have multiple lines of evidence that point to the fact that this was not aluminum, and not just the color. That's one argument. Of course, I raise it in my paper, but it's only one. Look, also, Jim, there's other videographic evidence besides the one that I cite in my paper.
Yeah.
And one of the videos, this was, the Loose Change guys, in their latest that they're coming out with, Loose Change 3, I guess it would be.
Yeah, Final Cut.
Final Cut, okay.
Yeah.
They show, now this I hadn't seen before, a video of the molten metal pouring out of the South Tower, yellow at the top, like the other video, and I might add photographs, which photographs appear in the NIST report, Appendix H, buried. But if you look, you'll find it there. So, again, the color is recorded in all of these. But more significantly, as the metal approaches ground level, so this videographer is far enough away, he's able to follow the metal down. It is red at the bottom, yellow at the top. Now, this is after falling 500 feet through air. This is not the behavior of liquid aluminum.
Well, all I'm pointing out is that Michael Zieber, of course, our member who was murdered in a very bizarre incident in Minneapolis, was doing research on molten aluminum, you know, and had actually discovered that it does tend to glow and become different colors. In fact, a piece that he did with Judy Wood, we put on the site just for those who want to look at it. So it may be something worth, you know, considering in relation to the issues about color.
Well, of course, but I just went through the actual situation. I won't reiterate that, but I will say about the glow. I've seen the aluminum glow also when it's in the container in a dark environment, and also when it's in a container, even in a lighted environment, it reflects the color of the container. So if you're heating up, as we did, a steel vessel to the melting point of aluminum, which is 650, plus or minus depending on the alloy, centigrade, then the color of the vessel, in our case the steel, as it incandesces red, then the aluminum, of course, reflects that and appears red. But it's when you pour it out, Jim, it's not just in the, as you heat it up, it's when you're actually pouring it through the air in daylight conditions.
Because here we have some photos of aluminum that's glowing bright yellow in broad daylight.
You might want
to take a look at that, Steve.
Pours out of the South Tower. It's when you pour it out that now the color becomes significant, not in a dark environment. Obviously, it will incandesce a little. It's unusual, and it has low emissivity, as I explain in my paper. But when you pour it out now, it's in the air, and it will cool quickly, and it certainly will not appear red hot as it approaches ground level. Aluminum will not have that behavior.
We appear to have a mic open in the studio that's causing the extra
problem. High heat conductivity and low heat capacity. It won't stay red hot, even if it was glowing enough to appear red, which is highly unlikely. I mean, all these arguments come together. But the color alone is not the only argument. We have all these others, and of course, we've measured the solidified metals.
Let me ask you this one, Steve. A large number of cars seem to have been burned out over many blocks in the vicinity of the World Trade Center, and I'm just wondering, do you have a theory about where the electrical surges that ignited them and burned them could have come from? Could it?
I was cut off here.
Jim. Yeah, Steve.
I lost some of that connection there.
Okay, Steve, I was just saying, here's a second question I wanted to ask you, which is there appear to be hundreds, maybe even thousands of cars and trucks that were burned out over many blocks in the vicinity of the World Trade Center, and I'm just wondering if you have any opinion about what could have caused that. Could there have been an electrical surge that ignited them and burned them? And, you know, do you have any idea about that?
I have looked at a number of those photos, Jim, and what we see as we look at that is in many cases, the tops of the cars are burned out. The tires, which are more vulnerable to temperature and burning, are intact in many, not all, but many of the cars still have it looks like some of the cars actually caught fire. And this is, again, outside the realm of the official story. So that way, yeah, they didn't deal with this, as far as I can see, but this is important data.
One other point I'd make, Steve, is, Jesse, you may want to look at, there's 9/11 eyewitnesses published an open letter raising 23 reasons for the possibility of considering fusion, and just in the interest of total evidence, taking into account all the available alternatives and all the relevant evidence, you might want to address, you know, that piece at some point in time here in the near future.
Sure. I've already addressed it here on the program, but let me point out here, a nuclear weapon, if it's wiping out the top of the car, would certainly wipe out the tires as well. So this becomes contrary evidence to the nuclear weapon mini-nuke hypothesis, Jim.
We have a caller in Arkansas. Morgan, are you there? Morgan in Arkansas.
Hello, Jim.
Hello, Morgan. How are you, my friend?
I am
Steve?
Good, and Steven.
Steve,
hello.
I think we've heard this voice before.
Yes. Oh, hi. Hi, Morgan.
Hey, Steven, I want to go back to the aluminum glow issue, because this, of course, I'm an economist, not a physical scientist, but to me, this just seems like a very easy issue to resolve. If you go to this page that Jim was suggesting, where we have the title of it is Aluminum Glows by Judy Wood and Michael Zieber.
I haven't seen it. I was
not aware. I don't know when it went up, but she shows her experiments, and you're kind of downplaying or denigrating them because we are in a lab. And however, she also adds from a textbook. At the bottom, it shows two pictures titled Build an Oil-Fired Tilting Furnace. And these images show how to melt aluminum. And this is in very daylight conditions. You can see the shadows in the sunshine. And it shows the molten aluminum is glowing. It's at atmospheric pressures, and it's certainly daylight conditions outside. And then one other data point to address is I'm looking at your July PDF, which was then 175 pages, and I gather it's now like 200. But on page 63, you have a table showing the stages in which aluminum at different temperatures. Scott, and
metals at different temperatures, not aluminum. Yeah, I mean, of course, aluminum glows a little bit, but
Got the same stages
all metals,
color
all metals
indicated. So it says it's lemon at 1,830 degrees Fahrenheit, or therefore 1,000 degrees centigrade. So right in your own slideshow, it looks like and it turns white at 2,200 degrees Fahrenheit. So it depends on the temperature, doesn't it, as to what the color would be?
Of course. That's true of all metals. They incandesce. So I finally found this. The first time it's been called to my attention that there was this paper by Judy Wood. Really, the very first time. But I found it. I have it right in front of me.
Okay, but at
we're
the
looking
bottom.
I have said aluminum, as you melt it, it does glow a little bit. I'm looking at darkened conditions here in the lab. Look, I've worked with molten aluminum repeatedly. I've taken photos of it. They're in my paper.
But Judy and
Michael
did.
This is not glowing.
And any experimentalist can do this, and I don't think it's a scientific controversy about aluminum glowing.
It's not flowing in Judy's lab either, and it's certainly in darkened conditions.
Well, it's liquid certainly in form there. You can see it's kind of at the cusp of solid, liquid, you know.
Right.
She's just showing you different pictures at different stages there, and it's...
Sure.
It
glows,
and
dark and mentioned in the steel cup that we used, we could see it glowing red because of reflection from the steel cup and because it's darker in the cup.
But then we go to daylight, I'm worried about this because of a couple things. Is your status as a scientist, but also why it goes back to Jim's question.
I'm going to answer a question here before you go to another question. At the bottom of this paper, we have images from a book showing how to melt aluminum, but that doesn't mean that this is necessarily aluminum that's flowing. I've seen this picture, and I've asked people to check. Let's see if this is really aluminum. Actually, as it's flowing, it looks kind of silvery. It's when it hits the ground, you can see it on the ground. Then it's yellow hot. I believe that you'll find that is ferrous. I had another picture just like this.
Now, are you talking about the NIST picture?
No. This is at the bottom of Judy Wood's paper. She has these two photos from a book.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I believe
that if you ask, you'll find that this is, in fact, not aluminum. The behavior of the molten material on the ground is yellow. It's not the behavior of aluminum, with which I've worked many times. I'm saying it's not aluminum.
Morgan, I want to thank you for calling
in.
Stand by. We have my special guest, Steve Jones, for our final segment. Thank you.
Attention, this is an RBN Self-Reliance update. RBN has just learned of a new bioactive superfood for garden plants, flowers, and herbs. It's called ProtoGrow, and it is so effective at producing rapid and natural plant growth that it seems to force plants to grow like crazy under almost any soil in light conditions. Now, here's the best part for our listeners who garden for self-reliance. ProtoGrow's unique blend of C nutrients maximizes mineral uptake, dramatically increases bloom set, and gives any plant a tremendous burst of new growth. In fact, some plants may double in size the very first month. ProtoGrow is also guaranteed to produce more succulent, mouth-watering fruits and vegetables than you can carry back to the house. And if you want to double or triple the potency of herbs or wheatgrass, you can. If you want to grow nutritionalized superfoods with non-hybrids, it's now easy. RBN listeners who want to stay prepared should call right now to order ProtoGrow. Ask about their self-reliant super pack. Call 877-327-0365. 877-327-0365. Or visit the ProtoGrow website at www.protogrow.com.
Can you grow your own nutrition on a shelf indoors in 10 days? Wheatgrass juice is live superfood, the richest nutritional liquid known to man, packed with amino acids, living enzymes, and over 100 elements. 2 ounces of juice have the same nutrition as 3 pounds of choice garden produce. Call 1-877-699-4328. That's 1-877-MY-WHEAT. The stamina, healing, blood building, weight control, and cleansing are just the beginnings of what you will reap from pennies worth of grain. For the book, seed, and the beautiful stainless steel hand crank wheatgrass juicer for $150 plus shipping. No monthly pills, no monthly bills. This is real self-sufficiency. Go to AustinWheatgrass.com or call toll-free 1-877-MY-WHEAT. That's 1-877-699-4328. And thank you for your support of our labors and of the RBN network.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a 1-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49? Call AFP toll free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Living is easy with eyes closed. Misunderstanding all you see. It's getting hard to be someone, but it all works out. It doesn't matter much to me. Let me take you down.
This is Jim Spencer. The program is Non-Random Thoughts with my special guest, Steve Jones. Steve, just by way of some concluding reflections, it seems to me an awful lot of Americans don't understand the nature of scientific reasoning, especially the function of Occam's razor. They think that the simplest theory is the preferable theory, period, when, of course, the simplest theory is only acceptable when it can account for all of the relevant available evidence. So what you want is the simplest theory that can account for all the evidence.
That's correct. And another thing that people need to understand, Jim, is that as we develop these different lines of evidence and put them all together, the picture is very clear that the official story is false. And that really ought to lead to an investigation we discussed. Now, there may be some line of evidence, like the color of the metal as it pours out of the building. Personally, I find it quite strong. Others might find it weaker. That does not eliminate the whole line of evidence for thermite. You must understand that. And I know you do, Jim.
Yeah.
But I'm afraid some of our callers, one in particular, might not have understood that. Maybe he did, but I don't find that in his remarks. Look, I have this answers to objections and questions now up at my research website. I have in there a picture of metal pouring out at a foundry. And a friend in Japan said that some people are using this photo to say that liquid aluminum glows yellow-white hot even in lighted conditions. So I wrote to the foundry, and I said, look, people are saying this represents aluminum. It was, after all, in a web page that discussed aluminum. And they wrote back and said, well, in this case, and I'm quoting now from their reply, the metal pouring is ferrous. Ferrous means mostly iron. And now that's what I thought. Now, we'll find out at the bottom of the page of Judy's paper, we see a similar picture, metal pouring out. It's not the metal pouring out that interests me so much as the metal on the ground. I will say I don't believe that is aluminum, but we have to find out by asking the people at the foundry, you see? And testing what samples we have and looking at all the evidence.
Yes.
I mean, the color as it initially comes out, sure, to me, having worked with aluminum and others, molten aluminum, is not indicative of molten aluminum. First of all, how did it get to 1,000 degrees centigrade? Aluminum melts at 600 centigrade. So what, you have a pan in there inside the building? You're heating up the aluminum from the plane to 1,000? Why doesn't it flow away when it reaches melting temperature?
Steve, listen, I just want to thank you for coming on to the program. There are tremendous demands on your time. I think that
both of ours, yeah.
We're in this fortunate position that actually, for maybe the first time, the nation, the attention of the nation has been captivated by these issues. And
right.
I don't think, relatively nonsensical stories about a bunch of Asians who are supposed to be blowing up a bunch of planes in England ought to distract us, but I can assure you that that's the function of that event. It's supposed to mislead and distract us and bewitch us from following the truth. Steve, I want to thank you for all of your contributions to Scholars for 9/11 Truth, and I want to thank all of our listeners for coming on to listen with us. This is Jim Fetzer, Non-Random Thoughts. Thanks for listening.
Everyone agrees our children are the future leaders of this great nation. How can we expect the founding values of our great republic to continue with future generations when these same values are being phased out of the government-run school system? There is a solution. The Little Red Schoolhouse Project, a community-based school system founded by Dr. Jake Wade to provide a biblical and constitutionally based education for our children. Help us prepare the next generation in our fight for freedom. Ask us how you can help by writing to Providence Christian Academy, 280 Tenny Creek Road, Dale, Texas, 78616, or by calling 512-398-4833. Once again, that is Providence Christian Academy, 280 Tenny Creek Road, Dale, Texas, 78616. Support your local Little Red Schoolhouse. Call 512-398-4833 and ask how you can help ensure no student is turned away.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.